there is a mirror, which faithfully duplicates appearances. Men often infer from this mirror that the library is not infinite. If it were, what need would there be for that illusory replication? I prefer to dream that burnished surfaces are a figuration and promise of the infinite.
When Borges publishes Ficciones in 1944, the literature of the world was, what, 6,000 years old? Suddenly there appears a book in this lost city in South America, in Buenos Aires, that tackles those 6,000 years of literature. This is the book that defines what literature is in the hands of a reader.
He took something that already existed, the little short fable, the puzzle story, the metaphysical thriller, and he completely transfigured it so that never again will you think of any of these things without thinking of Borges.
He invents a new genre which blurs the distinction between essay and story, between non-fiction and fiction, and elevates metaphysics to the ranks of fantastic literature. The title Ficciones was imposed by the publisher. Borges did not want to call the book Ficciones, that is to say, fictions. He did not want to label his writing as such. In fact, some of the stories that appear in the book appeared as essays, and people took them seriously. Borges said many times that because he was a lazy writer, he felt that he couldn't really write a novel, and that it was far better for him to assume that the novel had been written and then simply to write its commentary. He said that to invent the plot for a novel was high entertainment, but to actually write that novel was an exaggeration.
He loves mirrors. He loves spiral staircases. He loves circular labyrinths. He loves, as it were, repeating situations where you go through a door and find yourself in the same place, going through the same door. He likes finite images of infinity. The idea that any given event exists in a multitude of universes simultaneously is part of the popular consciousness. You will meet it in science fiction films on the television. You will meet it on the net. The net, in fact, is Borgesian. Everything exists simultaneously forever. He is, long before it happened, the archetypal poet of the internet. People don't mind games if they are allowed to understand the rules. These are literary games that are games about reality, and Borges is always fair. He tells you what the rules are, either at the beginning of the story or at the end.
Borges's imagination was a literary imagination. It is true that he could invent these extraordinary plots, these wonderful, quirky stories, but they are all found somewhere else, and he was never ashamed of acknowledging this. He playfully gives you the sources, sometimes invents other sources, but you can track back Borges through the history of literature. Borges said in a famous essay on Kafka that every writer invents his own precursors. And in the case of Borges, the invention of precursors embraces the whole of literature. Every idea has its source, but that is not important. The importance is the discovery, is the assembly, is the offering new readers, the discoveries, the richness of this one reader.
My very favorite story is Pierre Menard, the author of The Quixot. And I like Pierre Menard because it's full of little facts. It's full of things about Cervantes and Don Quixote and French literature, and wonderful little invented bibliographies of very obscure scholarly works which Pierre Menard published largely in Nîmes. It is about the nature of reading almost more deeply than any of the others, because Pierre Menard sets out to write The Quixote, which was written in the 17th century, in the modern world, not in his own language, but in the same words as Cervantes, but they will be modern words.
This extraordinary task is based on a very classic idea. It's an idea that you find, for instance, in Sir Thomas Browne, that we are capable of everything that every man has ever done in history, that every man has access to the whole of history, and every idea is possible to everyone.
And then Borges does, which is the one thing I think you're not expecting him to do, he quotes Cervantes, as written by Cervantes, and he says, of course, these are sort of reasonably interesting 17th century clichés. And he then quotes them again, and he says, these words are absolutely extraordinary in Pierre Menard.
Truth, whose mother is history, rival of time, depository of deeds, witness of the past, exemplar and advisor to the present, and the future's counsellor. This catalogue of attributes, written in the 17th century and written by the ingenious layman Miguel de Cervantes, is mere rhetorical praise of history. Menard, on the other hand, writes, "Truth, whose mother is history, rival of time, depository of deeds, witness of the past, exemplar and advisor to the present, and the future's counsellor." History, the mother of truth. The idea is staggering. Menard, a contemporary of William James, defines history not as delving into reality, but as the very fount of reality.
And he ends this wonderful defense of the power of the reader with the suggestion that any text can be renewed from the point of view of the reader.
You get a lot of modern literary critical theory about what's called intertextuality. And critics will solemnly write about how one book is reading another book and how one modern Gothic romance is reading, say, Wuthering Heights or, say, Villette. Borges does that in the most playful, most profound manner. He just shows you that all books, in some sense, are part of the same book because they're part of the nature of the language. And in The Library of Babel, he says that it reduces to 20, 25, 26... characters. Everything is made of those. He's like a magician bringing endless sort of strange little glass things out of a hat that turn into feathered birds and fly away. But you know that they're both little glass things and they were in a hat and now they're flying. It is daunting. There is nothing like him.
He is a playful writer and a playful reader. And there is what Chesterton, one of his favorite writers, would call the joyful capering around discovered truth. There is no solemnity in what he does. And from that point of view, in that mood, he suddenly tells us everything that can be told about literature.
A comparison between Borges and Lewis Carroll is beautiful because Carroll's world is sort of spread out in the shape of the chessboard, and the creatures are strange and wonderful and amazing creatures. Or the scene in Alice in Wonderland, which Borges loves, where Alice encounters the White Queen, I think it is, who tells her that she's only a figure in the dream of the Red King, and that if he wakes up, she won't exist. Borges asks that kind of question. And he asks it with the kind of playfulness that makes that kind of question more profound, not less, as indeed Carroll did.
The language of Borges is essential to the renewal of literature in Spanish in the 20th century. Spanish had come to the early 30s as a convoluted Baroque language in the worst sense, where the accumulation of adjectives hid many times the poverty of a central idea. Borges himself indulges in this style in his early writing, but by the time he begins writing ficciones, Borges's vocabulary becomes much simpler, and he invents a sort of neutral Spanish which reflects the very clarity of the Spanish of the Golden Age. And I think that every important writer in Spanish of the 20th century has acknowledged at least this debt to Borges, that he gave the Spanish language a clarity, a simplicity, and at the same time a richness of imagination that it did not have before. I have been going through the stories of Ficciones, especially the stories of the first part of Ficciones, of the Garden of Forking Path, and discovering that every book I can think of is somehow outlined in one of those stories somewhere, perhaps in a line, perhaps in half a line. Stories not yet written in 1944. Everything is there. And I have discovered, any reader can discover, Shakespeare, Dante, but also postmodernist writing, Cortázar, Salman Rushdie, everyone is in the imagination of Borges, in the imagination of Borges's literature.
The goal that led him on was not impossible, though it was clearly supernatural. He wanted to dream a man. He wanted to dream him completely, in painstaking detail, and impose him upon reality. This magical objective had come to fill his entire soul. If someone had asked him his own name or inquired into any feature of his life till then, he would not have been able to answer. He dreamed the heart, warm, active, secret, about the size of a closed fist, a garnet-coloured thing inside the dimness of a human body that was still faceless and sexless. He dreamed it with painstaking love for 14 brilliant nights.
I started to write, and I don't think all writers do, but a great many do, because what I loved was reading. What I loved reading was strange things, not part of my daily life, dragons and strange beasts and labyrinths and forests. And I think immediately when you read Borges, you have this sense of being in contact with that kind of reader, a person for whom reading was like a sort of explosion in the brain. He discovered that there was more to life than just living. And it's interesting that a lot of the writers he likes are rather surprising. He likes G.K. Chesterton, he likes Robert Louis Stevenson, he likes Sherlock Holmes, he likes the great mysterious plain storytellers, which are what starts you thinking the written world is more exciting and greater than the real world.
In the birdless dawn, the sorcerer watched the concentric holocaust close in upon the walls. For a moment he thought of taking refuge in the water, but then he realized that death would be a crown upon his age and absolve him from his labors. He walked into the tatters of flame, but they did not bite his flesh. They caressed him, bathed him without heat and without combustion. With relief, with humiliation, with terror, he realized that he too was but appearance, that another man was dreaming him.
A.S. Byatt and Alberton Mangel have been discussing Fictions by Jorge Luis Borges. The readings were by Stephen Thorne, from the translation by Andrew Hurley. The producer was Virginia Crompton.